I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to worship at the altar of music and comedy. The giddiness and the harmony of a well-crafted comedy song brings great joy in abundance. Join the tinkling talents of David Thames and me, Phil Nicol. Sit back, turn it up, and enjoy Songs in the Key of Laugh.
Yeah, Songs in the Key of Laugh. Well, here we are. I'm Phil Nicol.
And I'm David Thames.
And this is our very first podcast. The first podcast that we've done together, anyway.
It is, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, and I mean, this podcast is, I think it's going to be spectacularly fun. If you like musical comedy, if you like musical comedians, if you like comedy songs, you're in the right place. Now, my background is I was in a comedy, musical comedy trio for many, many years that traveled all over the world, a group called Cork the Just Pigs. But I never really considered myself a musician. I always thought I was just a comedian that got away with it. And David Thames.
David Thames, that's me. I'm the opposite.
Of course, it's you. The only other person in the room.
Well, I am actually, yes. I consider myself the opposite. I am a musician who has played lots of comedy songs, and I've also written lots of comedy songs. I used to have a show called The Ruby Darlings that I did with Lily Phillips that toured around as well. Wrote lots and lots of comedy songs. But I don't feel like there's ever been a place where those songs can just be played and they can be appreciated.
Yeah. Well, there is now. It's this is our podcast.
This is the podcast for that.
Yeah. Now, the way the podcast came around, in case you're interested, is that David Thames and I live close to each other. And during the lockdown, I was going for long walks and David was going running, and we kind of bumped into each other at a bus stop going nowhere, and we decided to go for a walk.
Absolutely. I have to say, since that point, I haven't been running.
And I haven't been walking.
Well, there we go. In fact, as we met at the bus stop, you were sitting down and I was walking. So neither of the things that we said that we were doing. But yes, we went on a wonderful, wonderful walk.
It was a muddy walk.
It was a muddy walk. And during this muddy walk, I might have taken a tumble.
Yeah, you fell over.
And I did fall
over.
That's
when I knew you were made for this podcast.
Is it a fall? Can you call it? At what age does it become a fall?
Oh, yeah, you fell. You just fell over. You fell over, and I laughed.
and then we
didn't really know each other that well at that point. I think at that point, I thought the way you bounced up and took it in good humor, I thought, I really like this guy.
And by the time way I fall over, I just, makes you think, yes, I can do a podcast with this person.
Well, it can't get worse.
That's true, yeah.
So we got together. By the time we got back, we decided to produce a comedy podcast about songs in the key of laugh. So coming up in this podcast, over the series, we've interviewed some of the great purveyors of comedy songs, some of our favorites. Tim Minchin, Jess Robinson, The Mighty Boosh are going to be on, Boothby Graffo, Bare Naked Ladies. We're going to have all these amazing guests talking about how they go about writing comedy songs. Because if you think about it, comedy songs are actually ubiquitous. They're almost everywhere, right, David?
They are. And I don't think there's anybody that I know that I work with that doesn't have a comedy song that they go to. Yeah. They lighten your day, 100%.
Well, always look on the bright side of life. Probably one of the greatest comedy songs ever written.
Absolutely. And who doesn't whistle as soon as they hear that first line?
Now, we have special guests where there's going to be games. There's going to be some dapstick from David and I that we hope you're going to enjoy. The first guest on this first episode is an absolutely phenomenal entertainer. His name is
Nick Helm. Absolutely. And he goes into some serious depth about how he writes his comedy songs. He talks about how he's written songs for television. He talks about loads. It's a fantastic interview. Yeah. I can't wait.
Here's a little tease of it.
age and
talk to adults
and talk to adults. It was really good. Yeah,
that boy's grown up though. He's in something else.
No, he's 12. He's forever, frozen in time as a 12-year-old. He's 39 now. It's weird. So sad. It's so sad watching him age because I don't age. Just the boy.
So we're going to come back to Nick Helm later in the show. In fact, Nick Helm's interview, which is, I was surprised at how in-depth he goes. I have always thought, because he's got kind of a gruff exterior, you imagine that that's what he's going to be like, but he's actually a real gentle man with an artist spirit. So stick around for Nick Helm's interview near the end of the show. David, you've written a lot of songs, not just comedy songs.
Yeah, I've written songs for lots of different people, lots of different purposes. One of the main things that I used to write for was the Ruby Darlings,
right?
Which was a comedy, it was a cabaret show that I did with Lily Phillips and with Rachel as well before that. And but with Lily, it was a filthy feminist cabaret show, is how we used to describe it. And we traveled, we did Edinburgh for a few years, we did it in America at the Orlando Fringe, we took it up to New York as well.
What sort of stuff were you like? Can you give me an example of like one of the, you know, silly Ruby Darling songs that you used to play?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. One of the sillier ones. This is about relationships. It's a really important song.
Okay.
Yeah. We've been together all this time. I know your faults, and honey, you know mine. Sharing a home, my future in your hands. All our memories, all our plans. You're the calm in my storm, my hand to hold. You're my morning, my night, sunset, my dawn. I can't wait till we're old. But baby, I will never poo in front of you. I will never put you through a follow through, and so on and so forth. And, you get the idea.
And ploopy poo.
And ploops you know all what? Of that thing, yeah. There's lots of those sounds, yeah.
You see, the thing is, that before the... Before the punchline, that's actually quite a beautiful song.
I know, right? And yeah, I think as I've looked on it later on, I've gone, I wrote this really nice little pretty thing a while ago. And then what did I do with it? I turned it into a song about poo. Phil, I've just played. Would you give me something from your comedy catalogue?
Well, you know, Corky and the Juice Pigs, we were quite well known. We were on Mad TV for two seasons with Corky and the Juice Pigs. And I guess the most famous song that we did is one that I play to this day. And it's a song, we wrote this in Australia, and it was like 45 degree weather. And we were watching an Australian SBS broadcasting show about the Arctic and about the Inuit, except the Australians didn't realize that we don't call them Eskimos, because that's a negative, seems a very negative word. But we wrote this song, and it's good. I'm the only gay Eskimo. I'm the only one I know. I'm the only gay Eskimo in my tribe.
So that song actually was about, we as we were sitting watching this program, Greg and I thought, wouldn't it be funny to be the only gay person in the tribe? Because Eskimos go out on seal hunt together in duos. And we just thought, maybe the loneliest place you could be in the world. And so we wrote the song, never intending it to offend anyone, but only to make ourselves giggle. And we played it all afternoon.
You're listening to Songs in the Key of Laugh with Phil Nickel and David Timms. Now, we mess around a lot.
We do. One of my favorite things is to play little games with you, Phil. Mm-hmm. And we've got a game that we're going to try and play together now,
keep
aren't we?
Keep on playing those mind games.
It's not a mind game.
Forever.
Okay.
No, it's called the Quickfire Parody Game.
It is. We also believe in a very good jingle. So we're going to rock in with the jingle, and we're going to explain how to play this game.
Okay.
shouldn't you just play the jingle instead of saying you're going to play the jingle?
No, I'm going to play the jingle now. We're going to get given a song, you know, and change it up. Make it so hysterical that you win the cup. This game is really easy, just follow all the rules. The rules are really simple, you're not allowed to lose.
Well, it's the quickfire parody game here on Songs in the Key of Laugh. Now, song parodies are probably one of the simplest and easiest forms of eliciting humorous response from music, because you recognize the song, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
You just change one word. Or change the style. Do it in a different style.
Absolutely. You used to do this, didn't you, with the Juice Pigs?
I used to do it with the Juice Pigs. We actually wrote most of our own songs, but we did realize quite early on, we were watching Harlan Williams, the famous Canadian comedian. If you don't know who he is, if you don't recognize the name, he was the cop in Dumb and Dumber, and he's a very successful film actor now. He was on in Edinburgh one year, and he was on after Earl Oaken, who's also hopefully going to be on this podcast. And Earl the Squirrel, he used to call him, had a piano on stage, and Harlan went on to make fun of musical comedy by playing one note because he didn't play the piano. He goes, you know, all you got to do to write a musical comedy song is to just change one word of the song. And they play one note and you go, he's got the whole world in his hair. He's got the whole wide world in his hair. They go, even better, you only have to change one letter. And he'd play one note and he'd go, Michael rode the goat ashore. Hallelujah. So anyway, this is the quickfire parody game. I'm going to pit myself against David. I'm going to give David the name of an artist and the title of a song, and David is going to have to come up with a parody for it. And it's going to be the first thing off the top of your head.
Okay.
Then David is going to give me the name of an artist and the name of one of their songs, and I'm going to come up with a parody for it.
Okay.
So it's quickfire parody round.
Quickfire parody game.
The artist is okay. Elton John.
Elton John.
And the song is Crocodile Rock. So you've got
Crocodile Rock.
Crocodile Rock.
I mean, there's a very simple one that we could go for. Crocodile Cock.
It becomes quite scatological quite quickly.
So, but I remember when. Okay. What if it was about running? Crocodile jogging. Have you ever run away from a crocodile?
Crocodile jogging.
Okay. It's something shock. I remember when crocs were fun. They would always go and tickle my tum. See what I did there?
I did very funny.
They did actually, yeah. And while other kids were sucking on their thumbs.
Whoa.
All I'd do was run and I'd run. Oh, crocodile jogging. It's something shocking. Okay, yeah. And
your feet just can't keep still.
They can't keep still.
Because you're crocodile jogging?
Because I'm crocodile jogging.
Quickfire parody game.
So, Phil.
Yeah.
I would like you to do Purple Rain by Prince.
Purple Rain by
Prince.
Purple Rain. So, okay, originally you want to go Purple Vein, which is...
Obviously.
Which is scatological. So yeah. This is the first chance. But you could actually change... If I change the... To make it a country song, so I go...
You're insane. That's why you're in this sanatorium, 'cause you're damn insane. I quite like that. You're insane. Get that gun off him, Hector. You're insane. Put him in the back of the truck, Bobby. I only want to see you in the asylum, 'cause you're damn insane.
There you go.
I mean, I feel like week one goes to you, Phil. Yeah. Congratulations.
On the quickfire parody game.
Well done.
Do you write comedy songs?
Ever dream of being the next Tim Minchin?
Or being Tim Minchin?
That's weird.
Yeah.
Why not enter our Songs in the Key of Laugh comedy song competition and maybe appear on our podcast?
With Tim Minchin.
That's better.
The Songs in the Key of Laugh comedy song competition. Enter today. Visit songsinthekeyoflaugh.com for details. The Songs in the Key of Laugh song competition sounds pretty good, right?
I actually can't wait. I can't wait to hear what you guys are going to send in to us.
Yeah, send it into our website, and then each week we're going to choose two. We're going to play them or a bit of them on the show. And at the end of the 10 weeks, the first season, we're going to pick the number one comedy song contest winner, and there'll be a prize.
Oh, what's the prize, Phil?
I don't know. It might even be money. It depends how many people.
I really like money.
I really like money. If you really like money and you write comedy songs, enter the Songs in the Key of Laugh comedy competition. Now, let's move on. We've got to our favorite part of the show, which is our interview section.
Absolutely.
And our guest this week is a powerhouse. And it was so interesting and so lovely to talk to the guy. Let's play the interview.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Nick Helm.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The guest on today's show is someone you might know. And if you don't, that's your own fault. But you'll know them soon.
You boy, you will.
This jingle has been personalized for a guest that we hope that you recognize. And this week their name is Insert Name Here.
It's Nick Helm. Nick Helm! It's Nick Helm, everybody. This is not just Nick Helm. It's Nicholas Tristan Philip Helm, I've read.
That's right.
Yeah, you've got... And my name's Phil, and my last name's Nickel, and your name's Nicholas, and your middle name's Philip. It's something weird going on.
Oh, yeah.
David, have you met Nick before?
I think passing once on a bus.
Okay.
But that is all. So, it's lovely to meet you.
This is the famous bus anecdote.
Yeah, exactly. We tell it to everyone. We just exchange names.
Everybody, every single person.
For people that don't know you, if that's possible, you're a multi-award winning star of stage and screen. you star in a sitcom called Uncle. Is that still running? Is there still a series being made of that?
No, and you were in it.
I know, but I was only in one episode. They didn't bring my character back, Nick. So.
Well, they didn't bring it. Hey, a lot of characters didn't get brought back, Phil. Don't you worry about that.
Okay, well, I was a bit upset because I thought I did such a great job.
You did a very good job. And it was always nice when we were filming because I did most of my scenes with a 12-year-old boy. So it's always nice when I knew who the guest stars were and they came in because, you know, it meant I could sort of see people my own age. And
talk to adults.
And talk to adults. So it was really good. Yeah.
That boy's grown up, though. He's in something else.
He's 12. He's forever, yes. 12. He's forever frozen in time as a 12-year-old. He's 39 now. It's weird. So sad. It's so sad watching him age, because I don't age, just the boy.
It's a child stars. It's what happens to child stars.
That's what it is.
Talking of Uncle, I watched the... I watched it from the beginning to the end and really, really enjoyed it. But I didn't realise that a lot of the songs that were in it were actually written by you as well. So
they were me. I wrote these songs.
That was amazing. I loved them. I always thought that was the best bit of the show was when the songs were in. And then I found out that you had written them as well.
Yeah, they were the best bit of the show. They were the best bit. The worst bit of the show. The worst bit of the show was doing the music videos. And because we always only had like 2 hours to do like an entire music video. And so, and it'd always be the last thing that you'd think of. You'd be halfway through a scene and they'd say, oh, Nick, can you just put on this rhinestone white outfit and come over here? And then I'd have to sort of mime to a song that I'd wrote 3 weeks ago and I haven't listened to since. And then I'd, you know, do you know what I mean? It was just like, it was always ridiculous. But yeah, the show was about an out of work actor. And then, when I went in, Henry Normal, who produced it, said it should be about a musician because then I could write songs for it. Oh, so they changed the pilot for me. And then after that, they wrote the series for me. So.
Yeah. That is amazing. I mean, they literally they saw you and went, we'll now just change the whole entire premise of the show.
I don't think. Well, I don't know how long it had been around before me, but they didn't have anyone to star in it. And then it was like a perfect storm where Henry had this script. He came to see me. I had worked with Baby Cow on something else. And then they were like, oh, let's just make it. So I didn't audition for it or anything. They were just like, we'll just let Nick do it, and then we'll make him a musician. So, Phil, you were a record producer on it, weren't you?
I was an angry record producer, yeah. And I yelled at Rizzle.
So, by the time Jordan from Rizzle Kicks. So by the time we got to the second series, it was all very much like, oh, right. Or maybe the first series was all about me being a musician. But then they sort of built on it with the second and third series and were like, that's the thing. But that wouldn't have happened, really.
And it was written by Oliver Refson and
Lila Vandenberg.
Lila, I remember Lila.
Yeah, Ollie and Lila. Ollie, I think, wrote the first, like, three episodes. And then Lila came on and sort of, like, helped them for speed, I think. And then they became like a real team for like the second and the third series. But yeah, Ollie wrote it and directed it. And basically the only question when we had a meeting about Uncle was whether we got on with each other. And it's like, yeah. And he goes, great. Well, if we make him a musician, then he can do a song every week. And if you like him and he likes you, then we'll film in September. And then it was like, oh. And I thought, oh, the TV's easy, isn't it? That's you just, and then you realise, oh, I was absolutely spoilt with my first project and everything else has been a real clusterfuck, but yeah.
Well, has it? I won't mention that to Ramesh. let's talk a little bit about music, because that's really what the thrust of this podcast is. And you've obviously been, first of all, are you a self-taught musician? Are you just a guy that picked up the guitar and taught yourself, or did you have someone that was helping you, or how did you?
I mean, I don't even consider myself, it's always weird hearing somebody describe you as a musician.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I feel like you're a musician, Phil.
Me? No, I feel the exact same way as you. When people go to you, say to me, you're a musician, because I've written songs, and I go, I'm not a musician. I've got friends. I know people in bands who are musicians and they're brilliant and can pick out notes out of, you know, follow along. And David is a musician, you know, David can, you could sing.
I try.
You know.
That's interesting. I don't consider David a musician.
No. So you've written for a non-musician then. We'll go with that. You've got three albums, four albums if you include the Uncle songs, is that right?
I've got two live albums, I've got two studio albums, I've got an Uncle album, and I've got an EP.
Right. Okay.
So yeah. And so I do write music. I can play guitar to the standard where I know enough chords to write a song. So if I get a tune in my head, I can work it and then I can sort of like go, right, yeah, but I think it's in the wrong key. And so maybe we need to like transpose it up or down. There's I think I always love working with other people. And I find when I do stand-up comedy, it's quite a lonely kind of job. I love being able to be on stage, and I love, you know, getting all the attention and adoration and all of that stuff. But what I really prefer is kind of like being on stage with other people and kind of like having people to bounce off with. And I always wanted to be in a band. And so I sort of taught myself how to write songs and play songs. And I still write music. And I still pick up a guitar and I write music that way. Yeah, I love working with musicians because they just elevate everything that's in your head to a higher standard.
I think you're doing yourself a slight discredit though. By your voice is fantastic and it's got so much character to it as well. It's really a real good instrument. When you're writing a song, do you have a process that you go through? Is it that you get a tune first, or is it that you've picked out a load of lyrics, you've seen something, you think it's funny and you're going to write about that? Is there a process?
I think it's different every single time, right? So it can be kind of, well Uncle was different from real life. So Uncle's great because they would go, right, we need 6 songs or 5 songs for this series. And then they'd say, the title is this. And then I'd have the script for the episode and I'd know my character. And so I'd have a title. Excuse me. I've just had Pepsi Max Cherry. So they'll give you a title and they might give you a genre or an artist, and it might be like, so with No Survivors, they were like, we want it to be like this big power ballad. And I think I had, it was something like Total Eclipse of the Heart or something like that was the reference. And I was like, yeah, sure. But then I was sort of like into Aerosmith and so then you have input that way. And with Uncle, because you had sort of like this, these parameters you had to sit into, that was really easy. I went on holiday for 10 days or whatever, and then I wrote a song a day. You know, today I am going to do Famous, which was one of the songs from the first series. And I'd wake up and it would be like, I'm fucking famous, bitch. I am also super rich. And then it was just like, and then it just, that all came to me in one go. And I sat down, wrote it in the morning, and then I had the rest of the day off. And then I'd have my iPad with me and I'd record a demo in. And then when I got back off holiday, I'd written like the entire show. They are character pieces and they sometimes progress the story. But I always made sure that, for my contribution to the series, was that if you took the song out, the episode would make less sense. So with Fight for the Future, you could take that out and you wouldn't miss it. But with all of the others, there's always sort of like a character detail or a plot detail or it would sort of illustrate how my character was feeling. There'd be some sort of point of view which added to the tapestry of the show. So I always thought that. But when it's up to writing your own songs for like Edinburgh or something, I've always found like calling my show Dare to Dream and then writing a bunch of songs about dreams, that's always very helpful, because when you are given the option, hey, do you want to sit down and write a song, it could be about anything, and then you're like, oh, well, what you do? I end up writing lots of love songs because you kind of, that's a constant. But with Uncle, it would sort of like, you'd get ideas sort of like fed for you and then you could bounce off ideas. And so you kind of like have to limit yourself to how many love songs you're going to write. And then you go, well, what else am I going to write about? I have like mental buckets where you kind of like have an idea for something and you can go, that goes in the one-liner bucket and that goes in the poem bucket and that goes in the song bucket, and that's a routine. And sometimes you'll be banging your head against a wall trying to work out why your stand-up routine isn't working, and then one day you'll go, oh, it's a song, and then you'll write it into a song. Or some days you'll go, why is this 10-minute monologue that I'm doing not working? And you go, oh, it's a one-liner. And so you'll rewrite it as a one-liner. And so it's good using songs as part of the comedy. It's kind of like, it gives you like an extra colour on your palette, you know? It means that there's another way of sort of addressing a joke or a mood or a tone, especially if you're doing an hour film. Because, you know, when you know, like if you're, if you're adding in music, you kind of like want to sort of like shape. It's not just like, oh, these are the five songs I wrote this year. It's like, it's like, what purpose does this song have in the mood and the feel of the show? Where do you place it? It's all very sort of scientific, you know?
Well, you know, I think that's that is an incredible answer for, and inspirational to anyone that's starting to get into writing comedy songs, because there's a lot of insight in that and there's a lot of angles in it. I think it's funny when you say that, because similar to you, I'm a little bit deprecate myself about my musical ability. And then I live with people like Mike Wilmot, who calls my guitar my cheat stick. You got your cheat stick with you, Nickel, because I think purist comedians feel that by playing the guitar or playing an instrument or singing a song, you're somehow getting out of writing a funny monologue. But actually, what you've just said there is absolutely true. You've just realized it doesn't work as that doesn't work as a monologue, and I'd rather hear it as a song, or I'd rather hear it as a one-liner. I think it's brilliant.
I don't think it's. I don't think they're that different as well. When you first learn to write a routine, like I would always take a notebook around with me. And what I would do with my notebook was, you know, every year when I had to do Edinburgh, because Edinburgh was always a great motivator. And I'm not talking about music necessarily right now, but in terms of like, I'd go through all my notebooks and I'd write up all my material. So then I'd just have all my material on my computer. And then when I first started doing comedy, it was just sort of like, right, we need routines. And so what you do is you go through and you go, oh, I've got 11 jokes about dogs, and so I'm going to put them all in a clump together, and now I've got a routine about dogs, and it's just about what order I put them in and how I bridge it and how I, but these are 11 jokes, they're all about one subject and they're all here. And that's exactly how you'd address some comedy songs would be. You take a subject and you analyze it from all the different angles, exactly as you would a routine, but you're doing it through, you know, music and rhymes. I feel personally that if it's just a funny song, I don't tend to if it's a song that just happens to be funny, then it's kind of like, you go, fine, okay. But if it's got a tune and it passes off as an actual song, where it's got like a bridge and it's got a verse and a chorus, and it's kind of like, and you go, that's really great. It's got a great tune. It's got an amazing hook. It's got a great chorus. You know, if it's got all of those things and it's a brilliant song that happens to be funny, that's when I go like, right, okay, that's my aim. I want to write songs that happen to be funny, as opposed to, if you took the jokes out, what's the fucking point in that, you know?
Well, the Juice Pigs, when I was writing with the Corkies, one of the things we always tried to do was, we got premise for a song, but then, and we write the rhyming couplets, which are the jokes, but it had to have a movement to it. So it actually they still had to have a story in it. So there had to be, you know, rise and fall and gain and loss, and like you would in any song. So you could sell it just as a song. So if someone didn't understand the humor of it, they'd still appreciate the sentiment of the song, you know. And so how did it
work with you? Because there were three of you on stage, right?
And yeah, there was. So, yeah.
So did you share the laughs, or how did you assign who did what?
Well, it would sort of, I mean, using the word organic, but it was happen. In the early days, the three of us were living together in a house, and we'd get wasted and sit and play the guitars, and we didn't have a TV, so we just amused ourselves and write down. One of us would come down the stairs in the morning going, I've got this idea, I've got the Burgermeister. Welcome to the Burgermeister's village. And then Sean would go, I can do it. He becomes the Burgermeister. And then Greg would go, I'll be the guy that lives, you know, I'll be the guy that lives next door. And I'll be Rudy, who's hiding in the basement. And we suddenly have this, a sketch and a song and a thing. It would just sort of flow like that, and we shared the laughs. There wasn't really a straight man. I was probably the straight man in the show, in that I'd welcome the audience in, and they were mental, but I was just as mental as them, actually. So but the songwriting was done together. We'd bring ideas to the group and then flesh them out for the most part. As the group went on, we became more disparate and we were married and had separate houses and stuff.
Like the Beatles.
Yeah, I know.
It's exactly like that.
So that, you know, that was that, you know, that's how the natural end of any band happens, is because they move on from each other. So
there's a lot married.
They get married, yeah.
So now everything ends.
And so
I just got engaged.
So long, David.
Yeah, exactly. This is our last episode of our podcast. Thanks for joining us. When you were growing up, Nick, did you listen to comedy music songs, or were you into rock music? Obviously, you already stated Aerosmith and all that stuff. Was there anything that you liked that you could cite as something that inspired you to be a musical comedian, or did that come after you decided to be a comedian?
What I find interesting is when I was at school, I did art, drama, English. I didn't do music. Maybe I did music, but I didn't do it for GCSE. So we did it when we all had to do but I didn't choose to do it. And I gravitated over towards art and drama. I was in a band. I mean, it was my band. I did it with my friend Chris Fuchs, and one of the teachers played Mr. Kale. Played keyboards, and then Rob Taylor was
Rob Mr. Taylor was Kale?
Mr. Kale was the keyboardist, the IT teacher.
Wow.
Still in contact. And then Rob Taylor was on drums, and then my friend Phil Stott was bass player. And I wrote a lot of songs when I was in the sixth form. I probably wrote like around 150 songs in a very short amount of time, like really prolific. I'd walk home, which took me about like 45 minutes, and I tend to have written a song by the time I walked home. You know, there's something about having keys in your pocket, and they sort of keep time for you. And then
I do that.
You get like an idea for a song. This is before phones. This is like, you get an idea for a song and you'd have to sing it over and over again so you didn't forget it. And then you get home and people would be like, hello, how is your day? And you go, like, get the fuck out of my way. Got to write this down. And you'd have to sort of like get to a piece of paper and like an instrument, you know, before the song disappeared out of your head. So I wrote like a whole load of songs that were very sort of like teenage and emotional.
Do you remember any of them?
I've got everything saved.
I've got the album Ethel's Little Ditties, which was me. Some of the songs I wrote while we were recording them, but there's about four songs on that date back over 20 years, and it was really weird to hear myself singing them because I've changed a lot as a person.
Oh my God.
You know,
I've got like recordings of my voice in like 2004, 2005. And I sound like a fucking angel. It's like, I'm so, but it's beautiful. I can't sing like that anymore. It's like, they always say about like Frank Sinatra's voice, sort of like it aged. You know, but it's sort of like he had a different sound quality at like every aspect of his life. And it's kind of like you go, yeah, I used to be able to sing. and now I've got whatever I've got, like the cheese grater that I sing out of. But like, there are these beautiful angelic things. And so the idea was literally I had 15 minutes of, and to go back to Mike Wilmot's the cheat stick
yeah,
it's kind of like I can do an hour without any songs. I can happily stand up on stage and do an hour without singing, and I like doing that. It's a nice break. But when you're an entertainer, like an all-round entertainer like you and I.
A dancer, then
you,
singer.
Then you just give them everything that you've got. Do you know what I mean? And it's kind of like,
desperate to be liked is what it is. I'm just desperate to be liked. So I want the... I learned early on playing the guitar at a party, and David, you must have had this, being able to play an instrument at a party, or it makes people go, oh, he's all right, actually, because he's got that thing. Or in fact, if they're good songs or you're singing songs they like Neil Young or whatever, people go, get the guitar, Phil, play, you know, whatever Beatles songs, and you sit there for an hour.
So, or you make the massive error and you play the full Disney collection the first time that you meet somebody. And then for the rest of the time that you meet them for however many years, they say, oh, it's the Disney guy. It's the Disney guy. It's like, I'm not the Disney guy. I'm a really, really good piano player, man. Give me something else.
But you can only do that once as well, can't you? Play the entire catalog. Well,
exactly. And you then, can.
So you maybe want to sort of drip feed it to people. You know, 1 week, Little Mermaid. Next week, Sleeping Beauty. Do you know what I mean?
But I was on a roll, Nick. I just had to keep going.
Don't give them everything they want. But like, so when I was at school, I did stuff like Slice of Saturday Night and Little Shop of Horrors, like musical shows and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I loved stuff like that growing up. And
so you wrote one called I Think You Stink. I Think You Stink. Is that right?
Yeah, I Think You Stink. Yeah,
a musical, I Think You Stink. Yeah. Was that the first music you had written, or is that the first one you presented on a professional?
So at school I'd written a lot of songs, and I was interested in sort of like singing and music and being in a band and all of that stuff. Went to university. When I went to university, so in 2001, so 20 years ago this summer, I wrote my first Edinburgh show. And then in 2002, I did another follow-up Edinburgh show, and I was working in a pub. And when I worked in a pub, I'd written this comedy song called Touching Myself Ain't Half As Good As You, right? and it was sort of like a country and western song. Yeah. And I was working in this pub, and I was quite quiet and unassuming, and I'd sort of just get on with my job, and people would, every so often when the conversation would lull, they'd say, and how's things going with you, Nick? And I'd be like, it's fine. And then if there was a lock-in or something like that, then they'd be like, oh, Nick's got a song. And so, and I'd go, oh, no, it's all right. And so then I'd play my one comedy song, and they loved it. And it was just like, this is weird. And then it would be like this thing where there was like this tension in the room every time there was a lock-in, because there was this guy that had the guitar that wanted, and he was like, he was singing like Bare Naked Lady songs, and it was like, cool. And then they'd be like, Nick, why don't you play your song? I'd be like, no, it's really, it's fine. Because he hates me. And they'd be like, play your song. And I'd play my song. So in 2002, when I had to do my second Edinburgh, I wrote my second Edinburgh show. I made, it was sort of like, because it's an hour, you get an hour in Edinburgh. So it was 6 10-minute plays. And the sixth one was a musical that was called Blokelahoma. And it was like three guys in a pub, and then they sang Touch Myself Ain't Half As Good As You, and then I did like Tap Dancing on Bubble Wrap, which was sort of, which is my thing, and it was like this big like showstopper, and I wrote this show, which took me like 9 years to write, and I put all these songs in. The songs acted as sort of like a Greek chorus type thing, and you come out and we did them. And the songs are so, it's like an open wound, you know. It's all filled with teenage angst. And I'd go on, and I sang these songs, and everyone, you know, laughed. Yeah. And and you kind of go, yeah, they're funny songs. Like a year later, I was doing stand-up, and I had to do, or maybe like a couple of years later, I had to do like a headline slot, and I had 15 minutes and I had to do 20. And I was like, well, I'll do a song. And then I did a song, and it was just like, oh, well, there you go. And then people like the song more than the material. And then you go, right, I'm a musical comedian then. So with the show, I Think You Stink, I did that in 2008. And I wrote that while I was doing data entry at a business park in Hatfield. And so every day I was working 40. I did 9 to 5:30 every day, and at the end of the week I'd get paid £205.
Oh my god!
And It's just like a pathetic. It's like it's not enough to build dreams with. So you just drink it. You just drink it on Friday and Saturday, and then you start from scratch again. Because what are you going to do? You don't have any time in the week to do anything other than the work. And at the end of it all, you're getting 200 quid. And so I just remember what I'd do is I'd make the screen size of Microsoft Word the exact shape and size of my head, so that in an open plan office you couldn't see it from behind. And then I wrote this musical and I took it up to Edinburgh, and it was called I Think You Stink, and it was all like based on like horror movies and stuff like that.
And you recently did that. Was it the Forum or somewhere? Did you do a revamp or a remount of that show? I missed it. But.
I did it for a month in Edinburgh. We were at like in 2000. And, so originally it was 2008, and no one came to see it. Mm-hmm. But like basically, what you do is you write a thing that you really care about, and. I think a lot of the songs in I Think You Stink is the best thing I've written.
Have you recorded it? Is it recorded?
We're halfway through recording it before the pandemic, and now it's about like, you know, it's the 13th anniversary this year, so I want to do something with it.
Yeah, brilliant.
But we did it in 2008. No one came to see it, and then and no one really knew it was a comedy. It was on at the Bedlam Theatre, and because it was in a theatre, people went to see theatre. And so if people are right, if people know something is theatre before they go in, they kind of like prepare themselves. And if people know that it's comedy going in, they prepare them. But if you're watching something that's meant to be funny, that's in a theatre, and I wasn't known as a comedian then, it was just kind of like this thing where people didn't know that they were meant to laugh. And then a couple of years later, I got some, I had like a breakthrough year in Edinburgh. And the first thing I did was in Halloween 2010, I did I Think You Stink in a pub. So Katie Wilkins had a gig, and I think Nathaniel Metcalf opened it and he did some Halloween-based material, dressed as Marty McFly. There was an interval. and then we did I Think You Stink in a pub without any production value whatsoever. We had costume changes on stage and it was all really... And it was in front of a comedy audience and they really loved it. And it was like, oh, there's legs in this. So I just stuck with it. And, you know, the aim is to do something bigger with it one day and add to it. Because it's modular. It's, you know, songs are modular. You can take them apart and put them together again.
Yeah, well, most. But I'm sorry that I haven't seen it, but I've heard of it. I know what it was.
13 years, Phil. 13 years.
Yeah, but a thing like, but they take musicals take a long time to gestate. You know, I mean, I've from being in them and speaking to people in the business, it, you know, it takes 10 to 15 years to develop a decent musical anyway, because they take that long to get them to sit just right. So maybe when you finish it, I'll come and see it.
Yeah, I'm tinkering with it for 13 years. But yeah. It's a weird show because it's not like, oh, and it's got a plot. It's like they are a series of vignettes. It's like a drive-in movie thing where it's like you're watching every, you know, you got a film about, you got a song or a poem about murderous twin sisters, and you've got like another one about a werewolf and another one about a guy, the Tesco chain store manager, who has a breakdown at work and he ends up killing everyone and the Tescos. And it's kind of like, all right, so, and then at the end it finishes with like a 15-minute rock opera, which is like your main feature. And it's kind of like, it's meant to be kind of like the trailers and then a movie. But everyone that's seen it has kind of gone, it hasn't got a plot. And you go, yeah, no. It's sort of like, you sort of like have to let it wash over you. I've never seen it. I've only been in it. And but all maybe... I know is, all I really know is the look in people's eyes when their lives change forever.
Well, that feels like a button.
And to commemorate the 13th anniversary of my musical, I Think You Stink. I'll play you... a track off of my forthcoming soundtrack album.
Oh, great. And what? What's the track called?
It's called Beast Boy.
Beast Boy. Beast Boy by Nick Helm.
Into months, get lost in the haze. I've been bitten by fear, things get more hard year after year. I'm wearing a mask, need help all the time, but I never ask. I've never been good, I've never been nice, I'm not misunderstood. I'm a beast, I'm a monster, a zombie, a freak, too useless to breed and too angry to speak. I'm a beast boy, I'm a beast boy, I'm a beast boy. The sun sets in the west, my veins start to burn, a pain in my chest. I'm always awake, I bottle it up, it gives me the shakes. I've slipped through the cracks, my hands start to shake, there's hair on my back. I've got to react, the pain's in my brain, my body contracts. I'm a beast, I'm a monster, a zombie, a freak, too useless to breathe and too angry to speak. I'm a beast boy, oh, I'm a beast boy, oh, I'm a beast boy. At night I long for the sun to brighten the dawn when nighttime has come. I smash through the streets, I prowl through the night, there's death at my feet. I crash through the night, I cannot tell what's right for right. Out of the moon, my time has come, an angel to serve. I'm a beast, I'm a monster, a lover, a freak, too useless to breathe, too angry to speak. I'm a beast boy, I'm a beast boy, I'm a beast boy. Woken up naked alone, something's gone wrong, what can be done? Oh, there's blood in my beard, I'm feeling so cold, I'm feeling so weird. The alcohol stinks on my breath, I'm feeling so weak, it scares me to death. Oh, I'm scratching my head, can't put into words what's just been said. I'm a beast, I'm a monster, a zombie, a freak, too useless to breathe and too angry to speak. I smash through the night and I prey on the weak. I'm hungry, I'm desperate, I'm in it too deep. I'm a beast boy, I'm a beast boy, I'm a beast boy. I'm a beast boy, I'm a beast boy, I'm a beast boy.
Oh god, that came out well, didn't it, guys?
Beast Boy. Wow. Well, great. Thanks, fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us, Nick Helm, here on Songs in the Key of Laugh with David Timms.
Might bump into Amy on a bus one day.
And me, Phil Nichol. See you later.
Thank you, Nick.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right.
And so, is that an actual goodbye now?
Yeah, that's an actual goodbye.
Adios, farewell. You'll be glad to hear that we think that your interview went well. But we have other things to get on with now, so you're going to have to go. I'm sure our paths will cross again, but whoever really knows? It's been fun, it's been musical, it's been comical at times. But now we have to leave you, so goodbye, goodbye.
This is Songs in the Key of Laugh with me, Phil Nickel.
And me, David Timms.
If you want more information on Nick Helm, visit nick-helm.co.uk. For his postponed Phoenix from the Flames tour 2021, the dates will be up soon. And check out his I Think You Stink album, which is coming out later this year. Visit nick-helm.co.uk.
And don't forget about our songwriting competition. Visit songsinthekeyoflaugh.com for more details. And please don't forget to subscribe.
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 Songs in the Key of Laugh.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.